This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary, sitting in for Scott Simon.
The economic figures for the third quarter show that the economy grew at an annual rate of 7.2%. That's the fastest growth we've had in nearly 20 years. Exports are expanding, investment is rising, housing construction is growing. The tax relief we passed is working.
President Bush speaking on Thursday to workers at the Central Aluminum Company in Columbus, Ohio. Joining us now to talk about the good economic report and the rest of the week's news is NPR senior news analyst Dan Shore. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Lynn.
Well, as we just heard President Bush say, the last quarter showed the fastest growth in almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. The president says that good news shows his tax cuts are working. Is that what you think is responsible for the growth?
Well, at least in part. You know, you learn in Economics 101 that if you reduce taxes, that tends to stimulate the economy. In fact, if you increase spending, which has been going on, that also tends to stimulate the economy. What remains to be seen is whether this spectacular 7.2% increase in growth during the summer is a one-time event or not. Most economists think that the growth rate will fall back after a while, maybe to 4% or so. But there is no doubt that this performance during these 3 months is spectacular.
And, of course, the White House and Republican political strategists are happy this week. What do you think the political effects of this will be?
Well, there I think we'll have to wait and see, because the more important is the dark side of the economic surge. That is it has not been creating jobs. In the quarter, when the growth went up 7.2%, at the same time, 146,000 jobs were lost. They've altogether lost about 3 million jobs since President Bush took office. And so that's the less rosy side of the rosy growth rate. And so you can't be quite sure that he can coast off to re-election based on growth.
Well, earlier in the week, on Tuesday, before this economic news came out, President Bush held a news conference. And at that time, Iraq was the dominant issue.
Yes.
The president defended his strategy there. But this week, there was just a terrible string of bombings, continuing even today, the violence there. A number of international aid organizations have said they're going to pull out. Was it premature for the president to say that Iraq is now a safer place?
Well, he says these things, you know. He tends to sound very defensive when he talks about Iraq. It is no longer that we have the bad guys on the run. It is now that we won't run from the bad guys. We will stay the course. That kind of rhetoric. He says terrorists want us to leave, but we're not leaving. But meanwhile, that's not saying that he's solving the problem of continued and increasing violence in Iraq. New York Times quotes senior officials as speculating that now that Saddam Hussein himself may be serving as a catalyst or even leader of the armed opposition, which is growing in sophistication. So the problems are very big, and saying we'll stay the course doesn't quite answer them all.
Well, at that same news conference, Mr. Bush also defended the mission accomplished banner that appeared behind him on May 1st when he declared the end of major combat operations in Iraq.
That was a particularly embarrassing, unhappy example of the president's defensiveness. He said that that banner that towered behind him on May 1st on the deck of the carrier Abraham Lincoln was put there by the crew. After the news conference, it turned out, and the White House had to admit, that it wasn't the crew that made it. It was the White House that sent it over. Scott McClellan had to admit that. And so Tom Daschle says, you know, we've lost more lives since Bush declared victory than have been lost until that time. They have to improve their rhetoric. And you know, to say that the White House sent over a sign to be put up there exactly in the right place, right sun, right scenery, all of that. And then it turns out it wasn't quite the way the president said it.
One more question about Iraq. The Senate Intelligence Committee gave a deadline of noon yesterday for the White House, the Defense Department, the State Department to turn over documents related to pre-war intelligence. What are they looking for in these documents?
Well, they, by the way, didn't, for most of the documents, they didn't meet their noon deadline yesterday. Some documents were turned over and some still have not yet been. But I gather what the Intelligence Committee in the Senate is trying to resolve is essentially To what extent the administration interacted with the intelligence community in those fateful months leading up to 9/11? Was the CIA not very sharp about the threat it faced, or did they get information that was not properly read and not properly acted on by the White House? And I think it's an important question to learn, and I think that if the Senate Intelligence Committee feels it needs those documents, I imagine they're going to end up getting most of them.
A really interesting story is developing, is underway in Russia.
Oh, yes.
This week, the chief executive of Russia's largest oil company and the country's richest man, Mikhail Khodorkovsky, was arrested. He was accused of fraud and tax evasion. But this arrest is also being seen as a political move by President Putin, perhaps intended to punish Khodorkovsky for his support of opposition parties. What's going on in Russia now say about democracy and the way free markets work in that country?
Oh, dear. Well, this becomes another embarrassment. President Bush last month at Camp David, with President Putin as his guest, came out, stood side by side with him, and said that that Putin's vision for Russia, a country in which democracy, freedom, and the rule of law thrive. As with Iraq, the president led a little bit with his chin, went a little bit too far, because democracy is clearly not thriving exactly in Russia. The basic story there is that with the collapse of communism, a lot of Russia's assets, especially oil, natural gas, were sold off at bargain rate prices, and this created a new class of business tycoons who are called the oligarchs. The politicians, starting with Putin himself, didn't mind very much about business making a lot of money as long as they stayed out of politics. But they didn't stay out of politics. There were two television tycoons whose television stations criticized the government. Those two television tycoons lost their property, and they're now out in exile. And then Putin has moved in on the biggest oligarch of them all, Mikhail Khodorkovsky, when they found out that he had given money support to opposition candidates in the election next March. So the tycoons, however, seem to have some support inside the government. When the government seized a big block of stock in Yukos Oil, that was Khodorkovsky's oil company, the chief of staff, Alexander Volozhin, resigned. Now the prime minister, Mikhail Kuznetsov, announced that he is deeply concerned. Officials, especially security officials, have been moving in on business, and the free market is a sometime thing.
And this is likely to put some strain on relations between President Putin and President Bush. But let us move on to a domestic story that we've been seeing a lot of this week, California, of course, and the wildfires there. And, of course, that state has had terrible financial problems already. Now it's estimated that those fires may cost $2 billion.
Yes.
What is that going to mean for Governor-elect Arnold Schwarzenegger's plans for the California budget?
Well, some money will probably come in from insurance and maybe from the federal government, but there will be a big gap, and it'll have to be filled. In an odd way, this terrible emergency makes it easier for Governor-elect Schwarzenegger to be able to do something like, say, announcing a temporary emergency increase in the sales tax or issuing some bond and asking for help. The promises that Schwarzenegger has made about no tax increase or all of that, he will probably be able to take an exception from in view of an emergency, which is really so important that everybody would understand is doing that.
Well, thanks so much, Dan.
Sure thing, Lynn.
NPR senior news analyst Dan Shore.